We've been tracking his private plane. It has just landed. Not even at LAX. John Krasinski wouldn't be bothered by the rabble, Dave Harrigan. It's Santa Monica Airport. John Krasinski's private plane has landed. And he's now talking to us on the plane, I'm told. Is that what you're hearing also?
Very posh surroundings here, Chad Hartman. Very posh.
It sounds rather loud and feisty. Are you still at LAX right now?
I am not. I actually just got to the lobby of my hotel. There's a huge line to check in, and so I'm sitting right next to a lovely fountain. But, yeah, it's not the most serene environment right now for it. So if there's background noise, I apologize.
We were debating this earlier. Where do you stand on 11 a.m. checkout and 4 p.m. check-in? Like right now, it's 12:09. Where do you think you're going? They're going to look at you and say, come back in about 4 hours, buddy. You're not getting in.
Yeah, it's a total racket, of course, because, I mean, you pay for a full day and you only get to check in at 4. Luckily, because I travel as much as I do, they usually allow me to get in a little early. And so I'm throwing myself on the mercy of the court when I go up to this attendant here. But usually I can get some pretty good luck and get in early. But, yeah, the 4 p.m. checkout or check-in is definitely a racket.
Could you potentially record that for us so we could play that later in the show? Dave, I need to hear this.
Yes. I need my free bottle of water. Do you know how many points I have?
I'm John Krasinski. Come on.
Yes. Don't you know who I am? I love to play that card.
Exactly. All right. Let's talk about tonight, and let's start with the deal. When it first happened, I like it. I like it even more now. The further past the deal, and by the way, none of this is to diminish Cat, because like this might be an example tonight where I can't believe I'm saying this, but they're going to miss Carl Towns' defense, his versatility, including on Anthony Davis. But DiVincenzo has lived up to the hype. He is a great fit, and he's going to work. He's going to play 30-some minutes. He's going to play end of games. It's going to be great. Julius Randle, we haven't seen a lot. The little bit, he was moving the ball. You know what you're getting, and it seems like he and Chris Finch should move in together, the love they have for each other. So those pieces really match in this team. The financial opportunities because of the great money Carl is – the staggering money Carl is making. So – again, I could turn out to be wrong, but from when was it? 3 weeks ago, whenever it was, when the trade was announced. Now, I am more convinced they are a better team today than they would have been if they'd have kept Carl Towns, who's probably the 30 best player in the league. He's still an essential asset that every team would want to have in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly do want to see Julius Randle out there for more than one preseason game and just really get an idea of how all of these puzzle pieces fit together before I make a full proclamation that, yes, this team is better. But what I can say is, in terms of watching it, in terms of talking to so many people directly involved with the logic of the deal, with the thinking of the deal, and now with the implementation of the deal, I do not believe that they made the trade for merely financial collective bargaining agreement reasons. I do believe that they have a strong conviction that this team, with the depth, with the toughness, with the kind of more conventional roster or lineups that they can throw out there, that they believe they are better suited to compete in the Western Conference and to take that final step that they couldn't take last year right now than they were with Karl Anthony Towns. I think that was a real factor in making this trade. And like I said, we will see how Julius Randle really kind of acclimates, and that might take a little bit of time. But I don't think it's a stretch to say that, yes, they can absolutely be better as currently constructed.
Yeah, and for me, you're right. You stated very well. It's when I'm saying better, I'm saying in the long run. And let's just touch on the money, and then I want to amplify your points. The money was enormous in Carl. Now, the money was not Glenn Taylor said, I'm not going to spend it. It was Tim Connelly going to Glenn Taylor because he still is the owner now. We're going to get to ownership in segment two. What it allows them to do. Because Naz Reid can opt out of his deal, and we were texting about this yesterday. Jalen Suggs, Minnesota's own, 5 years, $150 million. Well, if Jalen's worth 5 years, $150 million, Naz is worth every penny of that and more. Because right now, Naz is just a more essential player. They're facing the Rudy situation also, right? And so if they want to keep the core, they're going to have to spend a significant amount of money. And if they kept Carl, then you're just talking – I mean, how many guys can you have making 35 to 40 million in one roster? You just can't. Then on the toughness part, you're right. Randall and DiVincenzo are both tough players. Let's get to the bounce. Having a ball handler who can put it on the floor. I'm not saying DiVincenzo is Anthony Edwards in that way. And again, I think his chirpiness towards Tom Thibodeau during the preseason game about not finishing. But another ball handler on the floor is something they need. The versatility to have another wing. Also, you know, Nickeil Alexander-Walker is a nice player. He's in their top eight. He's not a point guard. He just, he, short doses maybe. Rob Dillingham, who knows? Maybe 2 months from now, we're both going to be blown away by how plug and play is. They don't want to play him a ton early. They want to play him. And so to have another ball handler, knowing if Conley's healthy, I think we're looking at 65 to 70 games. The parts match up really well.
Yeah, and I do think that the playmaking that DiVincenzo exhibited in the preseason was a pleasant surprise. I mean, certainly I think the other element that he brings to the table is volume three-point shooting. When's the last time that the Wolves had a guy that's just going to get in there and let it rip? It's Malik Beasley is the last player who has been who has that kind of a profile, and DiVincenzo is just a wildly better two-way player than Malik Beasley is. So you add him to that mix, and he fits in seamlessly. It's going to be from a competitiveness standpoint, from a defense and an offensive standpoint, it's just a perfect fit, and everyone has been raving about Dante DiVincenzo. And I do think that, you know, we have talked a lot about Julius Randle and his kind of proclivity for ball stopping, for isolation scoring, but in some ways, they need that, Chad, because I think last year in the Western Conference Finals against Dallas, Anthony Edwards was the only one who could go get his own bucket.
That's it.
And Julius Randle can absolutely do that when the offense bogs down, when it's crunch time and the defense digs its heels in. Now you have two dudes who can absolutely bully ball and get wherever they want and get their own shots, and I think that's going to really help things as well.
Yeah, from I think one of the first or second tweets that said, to me, ideally, you'd bring Randle off the bench as another ball handler when Conley is sitting down and you'd start Naz. Listen, in the end, I was wrong. I did not think Towns and Gobert would work as well as they did together. I was wrong. The draft choices, we can debate that one. I still think it was probably a couple more, but the essential part of that deal was those two guys working together, and it worked. I just would love Randle as that guy coming off the bench, but I get Finch's thinking, hey, he's earned the opportunity to start early, earn his trust, and then let's see how it works. Maybe it works better than I think. I just I'm not trying to downplay as much as Johnny's saying how I think tempting it is to give Randle the ball a lot with that second unit and knowing he's still going to play 30 minutes and he's still going to finish 95% of the games.
Yeah, I think that's the key, Chad, is I do think that in some ways, starting Julius Randle is more of a kind of olive branch because he's coming into he can be a free agent at the end of this year. He wants a big deal. We don't know if he's going to get that here or not. He certainly has a relationship with Chris Finch from back in New Orleans. They have a lot of trust together. And let's face it, for this team to be able to go to the finals, for this team to be able to win a championship, I do think that they have to have Julius Randle fully on board and fully bought in. And so the way to do that right away is, hey, you are a multi-time All-Star. You're a two-time All-NBA guy. Yes, come in, be the starter, see your name in lights, do that. But I also think that Finch has some very easy ways to get Randle out early, maybe, and have him be the guy who comes back at the start of the second quarter with the second unit and is more of the driver of that of that unit. You can play with the rotations enough so that, you know, you can break those guys up and mix and match a lot more while also giving Randle the maybe respect that a player of his stature has earned at this point in his career.
This is John Krasinski. We're going to take a short pause. Johnny's in L.A., Wolves and Lakers tonight. Then they take on Sacramento in a couple nights. Back with John in moments on CCO. John Krasinski from The Athletic. Read his great stuff all year long. He's with us, Wolves and Lakers. Okay, let's get to Edwards. Let's get to Ant. We got Nice. We got the photo shoot with JJ, which is living up to the hype, recreating the Moss and Garnett, the videos. It's all good. If you're an NBA fan, if you're paying attention, you've been around for a while, it's entertainment. We're all going to look and say, how does he take that next step? We're going to say, the emergence last year when Towns gets hurt and how well he played, and then what he did in the playoffs, and now the Olympics, and surrounded by Curry and Katie, and of course LeBron. What will show you, let's say in the first 20 to 25 games, that he is different? Because you can make the argument the way he played the last 20 in the playoffs, he was, I don't know, the fifth best player in the game, sixth best player in the game, you know, and that's great. Now, there's a big difference between overall 8th, 9th, 10th to all of a sudden you're the 2nd or 3rd. 2nd and 3rd guys win titles. What sort of signs, seeing them as much as you have, will show you that he has absolutely expanded on where he was at, the way he ended so strong last year?
Yeah, Chad, I think, like, for me, I want to see him be able to control a game when he's not hitting a ton of threes and scoring a bunch of points that way. I think he is a natural passer in terms that he wants to get others involved. He wants to see the floor. But I don't think that he has yet been playing the game to where he sees the moves on the board before you're supposed to make them, if that makes sense. And so I think that, you know, when he has been at his most dominant so far is when he has his bag unveiled. He's hitting step back threes. He's getting to the basket. He's controlling and imposing his will on a defense generally through his sheer athleticism and his just overall physicality. But if he can start to think the game a little bit more, if he can start to get Rudy more involved, use those screens with Gobert more effectively than he has been so far, maybe actually throw a lob or two, you know, every once in a while, and, you know, put pressure on a defense so that they have to worry about how he gets other people around him better in addition to what he does himself. I think that's the next step for him. And if he does that, then it's really hard to figure out how you have an answer for him as an offensive weapon in this league.
Let's talk ownership. You've been all over this story as close as anybody. Your former partner, Shams, who now is at ESPN, and you retweeted this with some good information, too. He's on with McAfee a few hours ago and is saying that in a month or so we should know, points out that the Rodriguez-Laurie group now has close to $1 billion. They're ready to wire that to Glenn. What is the timeline? What are you hearing? And then let's again make this point. We're going to have the arbitration ruling, and potentially that could go to Alex and Mark. It really could. We need to emphasize again that then there's the Board of Governors. Then there's the owners who have known Taylor for decades, who believe in him, who also are uncertain about, you know, what happens when Glenn passes away and want younger owners. But they also are well aware of what this price is, and they know what the Celtics are about to be sold for, maybe $5 billion. They really don't want a franchise sold for $1.5 billion. Where are we headed with all of this? Because a lot seemingly is going to happen in the next couple months.
Yeah, I do think today's kind of pseudo news, if you want to call it that, is actually kind of important, because what it is, and I've Color right away should they prevail. And so what that is not only does that mean that, you know, there was a, I think initially a vision that Glenn Taylor would give Lori and Rodriguez controlling ownership, but then hold on to about 20% and remain a limited partner. And what they're saying now is like, no, we're just going to, we're going to buy you out fully. We're going to take control of this whole thing. We have these plans for looking at an arena. We have all of these things. But a lot of what this is, Chad, is trying to dispel the long-running notion that, hey, these guys don't really have the money. And so it's not only a message for Glenn Taylor and for maybe even the local people who are following this, but I do think it's also a message to the Board of Governors that, hey, if you ever thought that we didn't have the money to complete this deal, that we wouldn't be good stewards of the franchise, here's another show of strength on our part that we can do this. We have Michael Bloomberg. We have Eric Schmidt. We have a big, deep-pocketed group of minority investors as well. We're ready to do this. Now, of course, they are going to have to, if they win in arbitration, they're going to have to go through the full approval of the league. They are going to look at all of their books, all of their finances, everything about it, and they will have to kind of go through those final steps. But all of these things that they are doing now is trying to position themselves as strongly as possible so that if everything breaks their way in arbitration, they don't believe that there are any more questions that they have to answer.
Well, you mentioned the arena. The arena is old. The arena isn't up to the other standards. They firmly believe they need a new arena. We both know they've contacted some top people that if they get ownership, they're going to look at locations primarily downtown, but it's so limited. And then if they would have to leave the area, whereas Glenn continues to tell people, no, we've put in plenty of money here. They've put in even more money this offseason, and Glenn does not believe they need a different building. So you want to talk about an area where there's giant separation. That's one. And then we both know this from our sourcing that the Taylor Group and people close, they're extraordinarily confident that he is going to be the owner. They may be 100% wrong, because I don't know that. I am absolutely not saying this myself. But there are too many people I know close to all the top people, and they believe that their view of the legal dispute either is going their way in arbitration, or will the owners will step in and award this team back to Glenn.
Yes, both sides, Chad, are incredibly confident in their positions. That they believe they're in the right. That they're gonna come out victorious. Now, I do think that it's really hard for me to handicap this from a legal perspective. I am certainly not an expert in this.
Yep.
I've looked at the contract. I've followed kind of some of that stuff, and we have had at The Athletic, we have talked to independent, neutral, legal minds who have reviewed the contract. And generally speaking, most of those legal minds say it looks like Rodriguez and Lori are in strong position with the contract itself.
I agree. Like you said, that's what I've heard, too. And then the Taylor people will tell me, no. But I'm with you, John. The smart legal people I've talked to in town who are involved in these type of transactions say, seems to me that Alex and Mark are on the right.
Yeah. So, yes, I think that the Taylor position is much more nuanced. And so it's entirely possible that they are right and they'll come out on the right side of this. If they don't, I do think that there is some hope on the Taylor side that if it does actually just have to go to the Board of Governors and that the NBA has to approve it, that maybe they will give even more scrutiny and even greater scrutiny to this, Alex Rodriguez and Mark Lori, and that they will come out on top of it that way so that there's another avenue for them to retain control. Again, we're kind of taking both sides, and you have to believe what they're saying or believe their positions or certainly look at it. And so it's a lot of, my guys tell me we're in good shape. Well, no, our guys say that we're in good shape. And so really, ultimately, that would happen. We just have to, this thing has to get to November, play out, and let's just stop the speculating and see something actually happen. That's where we're at right now.
Last thing real quick, because I know you have to go. Do you think the Taylor Group has to acknowledge that Glenn is 83? I forget the precise age. Mm-hmm. And if he's going to keep this team, that there is a plan for the next 5, 10, 15 years, and that the league is going to say, Glenn, we want you to live 30 more years. We don't know if that's going to happen. What is the plan if, God forbid, something takes place? Because Rodriguez and Lurie don't have to face that same situation.
I do believe that it would seem reasonable that the league would say, hey, if we are ruling in your favor, if this is going to you, what is your long-term plan? My guess here, Chad, is that the response would be, if Glenn were to pass away, that Becky would take over,
yep.
That she would run the team, and that there would be some sort of kind of New Orleans Saints type of structure where she is the chairperson, chairwoman, and then she has a set of advisors around her that would help her run the club. So that would be my guess. But I have not confirmed that. I don't know. But I would imagine that, yes, they would have to detail a plan that, hey, we do have the long-term interest of this franchise in mind, and it's not just trying to hold on to a team that is suddenly very competitive and very good, and this is all of a sudden fun again, and oh, by the way, it's worth twice as much, yes, as what we actually sold it for.
By the way, both of us are available to be a, yep, part of the ownership group, but we don't want to put any money in it.
No. If we could get the KG deal,
yes,
on that, that would be great.
That is the deal. Thank you, sir. Yeah. Travel safe.
All right. Thanks, Chad.
He's the best. Johnny K. John Krasinski. Follow him on Twitter and read his excellent stuff, The Athletic. All right. I'm looking at the WCCO Radio website, which I encourage you to check out. And here's our first graph. Minneapolis police are on the scene of a shooting at 29th and Lindale Avenue South. WCC Radio's Ari Bergeron is on the scene and says police are saying there's an active shooter situation in an apartment building. You're overseeing this here back in the newsroom. You're talking to Ari. What specifics do we know right now?
Well, we know they've closed off a good portion of Lindale and 29th and the blocks around it. So if you're out and about and you can't get around that area, please be aware of that. They got a call about a gentleman who had gone out onto the balcony of his apartment. I think it's called the Lime Apartments on 29th and Lindale. And somebody actually took a video of him, and he's standing out on the balcony with a gun in his hand, pointing it down, took about 8 shots at cars. Another car came up and went away. That's according to Ari. Then the gentleman went inside the apartment, and that's where we are now. There are SWAT teams on the scene. But Ari had a chance to talk to a guy who lives on the 6th floor, on the same floor.
Same floor as this guy.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. He said he didn't recognize him. They get on different elevators on different side of the building. But he said that talking with other people, the guy had said he had broken up with his girlfriend and that he was very distraught and that he had mentioned something about suicide by police, which is just the most horrible thing a person can do, in my opinion, because you're including someone like that. And that officer doesn't want to shoot you.
Has no interest.
Right. But if you're having
fearing potentially for others' lives and his life or her life, has to follow protocols and doesn't brought in this situation in any way.
No. So there are officers on scene with guns drawn, of course, because they don't know what he's going to do if he's going to come back out on the balcony. So Ari will stay there. But we'll hear more from that resident coming up in the next newscast.
Okay. At 3. So let's stay with that just for a little bit before we get to what happened with the 3-year-old, this horrifying story yesterday. This is one of those situations, Susie, and you know this better than I, but this could take an hour. This could take 2 hours. We don't know how long this
15
takes.
15 hours?
Yeah.
How long have we all been at standoffs?
Oh, yeah. I mean, things like this can change very quickly.
Right.
So it's great to have
Ari there.
They're
not letting people back in their apartments.
No.
So that's kind of.
There's no way.
Yeah.
Then we have this. It's just unspeakable story yesterday where a 3-year-old is struck by gunfire and is gone.
Yep, dead.
A 3-year-old is dead. Okay. Northeast. This is shot at the Hook and Ladder Apartments. I have not heard of that apartment complex, but it's in the 2300 block at Jefferson Street. This was when we were on the air yesterday.
Right.
Right, and it all started happening after we were off the air.
I ran over there.
Yeah, you ran over there. Okay, tell me about the scene you saw.
Well, it is an apartment building that's sort of tucked away. It's a nice little area. It's right off Central. You know, you go down Central to 22nd and kind of pop over there in that neighborhood.
I know that area.
Yeah, so two apartment buildings. And as I said to you before we went on the air here, I went there and there was a feeling, like I've been on crime scenes when they're actively looking for a shooter. There is a huge police presence, cars and cars and different departments. And I mean, there's quite an intensity. Now, this is just me telling you what I saw. It was not
this that. This is you, let's just add this, because you've witnessed this for three decades. Doesn't say you're 100%, but you're trying to give the context of what you saw yesterday compared to other scenes.
Right. This had a Minneapolis forensic lab. I probably saw three investigators in and out. There, no one was rushing. So to me, that felt like more of a potentially, although we have nothing verified,
we're not,
it could have been an accident.
This. Yeah.
You know, we've seen that too many times where one child has access to a weapon.
The amount of accidents that it could be is a multitude, so we probably won't speculate there. But yes, someone have accidents in the gun. There's many other things, right?
It still could be a person.
Yeah.
I mean, there still could have been a crime committed. Oftentimes a crime is committed when a parent allows a gun to be unsecured and a child dies.
Well, there was a great debate, Dave. You know that we had legislators on opposite sides of the debate on should we ratchet up the punishment if your gun is not in a secure location, right? And it's an interesting debate because, again, we don't know on this one.
Okay? Yeah.
So this is separate from this one. But we've had these horrifying incidents where someone left a gun in a drawer or a pillow and a child shoots a child and it's unspeakable. Then you have the other side of it where if you have a weapon, you legally have that weapon, someone is attacking you, breaking in. How far do you have to go for the gun, you know, and where is the level of responsibility? So this shooting took place yesterday around 12:45.
Mm-hmm.
We're sitting here 26 hours later.
And I just got a note from a police spokesperson who said he just talked to the investigations department and there's no new public information available. He said it's an active and ongoing case. Investigators are working hard to determine the exact sequence of events that led up to the shooting.
Okay, so let me ask you again, from your years of experience on this, does it surprise you the timing of this? Nobody wants it to be rushed. Nobody here is trying to be first. But in a case like this, is a day typical, atypical? What do you think?
I think we're getting on atypical. I think generally a day, I mean, if they don't have it by tomorrow, then something's fishy. Like, okay, was it or wasn't it?
Yep.
You know, was it a crime or wasn't it a crime? Do they have a suspect in custody? Kind of what were the circumstances? So I hope we know tomorrow. I mean, it is, you know, they like, I don't want to say hide.
It's a three-year-old child.
Yeah.
Okay.
Dead.
Which, the child is gone, right? By gunfire. And I'm not downplaying any person who dies in any way. They know that a lot of people are like, are you kidding me? A three-year-old child. And thus, they're getting a lot of phone calls. That doesn't mean they should speed up. They should cut any corners. But there's going to be a greater spotlight on this than other homicides. And that's not fair to the other people who've perished. But this is just going to draw more attention. That's just a fact.
Because it's a three-year-old.
Yeah.
Right, right. Last thing, University of Minnesota today, another protest next hour. After the 11 students had been arrested, after they damaged parts of the inside of the – is it Morrill Hall or Morrell? Morrill.
Morrill.
Yeah. Anyway, so Taylor's there, so she will let us know what happened. So who knows if there'll be any more police activity on campus.
Well, I'm glad you brought that because I can opine a little more on that. If you want to protest in a legal, peaceful, passionate way, go to it. Go to it. But when you're breaking, damaging property, holding people in when they want to get out, you know what that is? That's criminal. That just is. And there is a way, no matter where you stand on what's going on with Hamas, Hezbollah, Gaza, Israelis, Bibi Netanyahu, Sinwar, the amount of fatalities, October 7th, we've watched, let alone what's happened in the Middle East, forceful protests all across. You want to protest again? I don't have to agree. There are some protests I agree with, disagree. But when you're damaging property and holding people in an area, don't be surprised if you're arrested.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're willing, fine. But don't act like you were targeted if you broke property, announced what you were going to do, and then did it.
Mm.
Because we can go to all sorts of big protests. January 6th, if you showed up to just listen to Donald Trump and left, fine. After George Floyd was murdered and you protested nothing, fine. But if after George Floyd you're looting and breaking or you went into the Capitol, those are very different protests, and they're not peaceful and they're not legal.
No. So we'll keep our eye on everything this afternoon.
Thank you.
All right.
Excellent.
All right.
Jason is next. Jason's walking in. We're going to, at the end, talk about last night, but I want to talk Justin Sutherland, and we both noticed this. Jason tweeted about it. Justin Sutherland was very successful in this town. Handsome Hog, number of other restaurants I thoroughly enjoyed. He was featured on a number of chef shows. Came off as a likable guy, excellent personality. Well, today, Justin Sutherland has agreed to plead guilty to a charge that he threatened to shoot his girlfriend this past summer in St. Paul and hit her with a gun. The criminal complaint disclosed that a woman told police that Sutherland pointed a gun and vowed to shoot her, choked her, and struck her in the chest with a weapon. Fearing for her life, she put her hands up and pleaded not to shoot. The complaint continued. Officers arrested Sutherland during what turned out to be a second visit from police that evening concerning a report of domestic violence. So he pleads guilty today. He speaks, as you know, Jason, to the Tribune. And he says this: I was fully prepared to go to trial, but I did not want to give you media vultures the circus you were hoping for. He went on to contend there was never a gun with an intended use towards her, and I absolutely did not assault her. There was no dragging this out for 4 to 6 months. You've been around Justin Sutherland a number of times.
Yeah.
This is utterly ridiculous what he just said here. If he didn't do it, then defend yourself.
Yeah.
Get the best litigators possible, lawyers possible. But to say the only reason why I'm pleading to this is because of the media, when Justin Sutherland's profile is dramatically higher in the town because of the media, is insulting.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously not hearing the interview, right? You don't know if there was more to it. But it's a disturbing sort of pattern we see of people who are unable to accept responsibility. So you don't have to admit every single detail. If he had said, man, I wish I could take back that day. I regret my actions, and I'm committed to changing and improving myself.
How about even if you said, I can't tell everything, right?
Yeah.
Certain things.
Honestly, if I'm the judge, I'm real tempted to reject this plea agreement.
That has happened before.
Yep. You know, a plea agreement has to be an honest acceptance of guilt, and this ain't that.
No.
So, you know, I'm open, seeing as I didn't do the interview and I don't know what else was said.
Yep.
You want to give at least a little bit of opportunity that maybe there was something else said. But if this was what was said.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Paul Walsh did the interview either. It just says with the with the paper. So it could have been with their food reporter.
Right. Right. I would think they might clarify that and wouldn't go with that quote as damning as it is.
It's bad.
You know,
it's
if
bad.
It was out of context.
Just accept responsibility or don't. Or like you said, fight it.
Yeah. By the way, again, the media And again, it's the broad media, like we're all one. Oh, it's really so nuts. But he used...
The media was overwhelmingly cautious and generous to him in the time of the accusation.
100%.
So he could have been absolutely put on blast. Now, yes, some of the national media.
Right.
He was in People and U.S. Weekly and some of that
because
stuff.
Because he had benefited from it before and was viewed so likable.
Partially
and
that,
favorable.
But partially for clicks that he's a TV name.
Right.
Do we think the national audience really cares about Justin Sutherland? He's a minor national
TV. It's both
TV
ways,
guy.
Right? The clicks.
But you take the win, you take the bad. No one wants to take the bad. They just want the good. I get it.
That is so true about so many aspects of life. What did you think about last night?
Way better than I expected.
Yeah?
It was really nice.
Yes.
It is weird when you've been here for 2 years, but I've been listening to this station for 20.
Yep.
Right? So hearing some of the stories of, Al Malmberg was hilarious. I love Mischke. I'm like...
He was so talented.
He's so good.
Yep.
Mischke's show was like, I love Mischke. And my wife was like, could you turn this weird stuff off? I'm like, this guy is the biggest radio genius I've ever heard.
There's nothing wrong with that, by the way.
No, we're both right.
Yeah.
I get it. She was like, this is not for me. I'm like, oh, my God, this is for me.
Create a reaction.
He was
caused people to listen.
So good.
And feel some way. And
kind of makes you miss some of the mischief, though. Like back in the day, it sounds like there's a lot more nonsense going on around here than we do.
Plus, I have a picture of you now, the two of us, where it catches you in a moment where your mouth is open and your eyes are half blinking. I'm using that now whenever you call me. That's the picture that is going to pop up. So that's my major takeaway.
Perfect. That's a win.
From last night.